What's up, George? What's going on in the House of Chris tonight?
In the House of Chris tonight, we don't have a guest, but we are going to be talking about licensing and IP, you know, rights and all that other stuff. So we're going to have a little fun, open discussion. So join us for it.
Let's get it.
Only show for independents all around, giving you a platform to spread your word all over town. Catch the Craze is the place to promote to your fans with the dream of Medina and Sam the Crazy Man. Subscribe to our show and never miss an episode. It's time to get your meds, listen to us on the go. Updated every week, we never miss a day. Join the squad, come on in, it's time to catch the Craze. If you are an independent,
catch the Craze!
Making moves on your own,
catch the Craze!
On your grind in the streets,
catch the Craze!
Join the movement,
catch the Craze!
Yeah, George, we did it again. Come on now. Yeah, you want to do it. Catch the Craze. Welcome to Catch the Craze Podcast. I'm your host with the most hip, the Crazy Man, Farrell. And I am with
George the Dreamer, Medina. What's happening, everyone? Yay! Welcome to another exciting episode of Catch the Craze. It is Tuesday, March 12th, and we are live. We are live with another episode. We are, what up, Lou? We are, you know, we don't have a guest tonight. We're guestless. Yes. What's up, Paul? Hades in the house. You go. What's happening? Yeah, so it's just going to be the two of us. It's just the two of us. We're going to be talking.
We're going to be talking about intellectual properties.
We're going to be talking about the rights to those intellectual properties, licensing, and all that other fun stuff. And it stems from a video that we both saw about ElfQuest. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk about a little bit about, I think you mentioned here, what is it?
Hero Bear and the Kid, Mike Krunkle, Ninja Turtles.
The Turtles. And you know, the compare and contrast the all those properties and what they did and how
the creators of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Right. Oh yeah. And how, you know, what they did to become successful.
Word.
And what they didn't do and how successful they became or didn't become. So yeah, it's gonna be a good show, man. It's gonna be a good show. But what do you got going on, Sammy? Talk to me. Talk to me.
Come and talk to me.
I really want to meet you, girl. I really want to know your name. Anyway, so I got this in the mail. Kid in the college. Number five.
Finally, leading with that, Sam. You're never getting. I like this,
man. Oh, look at this. William Russell. Wow.
Yo, what's going on? Oh, what up, Will? You said, what the F?
What's it? Tell the cops.
Tell them nothing. Tell them nothing.
So, Kid in the Comic Duty is a comic strip in the Kid in a Comic. You can have this delivered to your doorstep by ordering a subscription through akidinacomic.com, or you can go to your local comic shop and ask them to pick this up by contacting a Kid in a Comic. And it's a comic strip newspaper with tons of fantastic stories, and Duty's one of them. So get yourself a copy. Issue 5 just came in the mail. I'm really excited about this. Go through it. On top of that, what's up, Texoma, baby? That's right.
What is it? It's 7 issues, right?
There's 7 issues. Yeah, I just sent them 6. You guys are OnlyFans yet? Yeah, I know. I told George, man. Show off his calves.
I'll send you the link. I'll send you the link, bro.
Show off his calves.
DMs, baby.
Yes. And this Saturday, I'll be at LitCon in Greenville, Texas. It's really from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I believe, not 4 p.m. So I'll be at LitCon. It's a one-day show. I'm excited about that. That's going on. And right after that, in April, I'll be at Central Texas Comic Con in Waco. And then in May, Comic Palooza in Houston. And then in June, I will be at Superhero Comic Con. And that's in San Antonio. Then I'll be in College Station, which is in September. But I just, there's a couple of shows that I will be announcing very soon, just waiting for the confirmation. And once I have those lined up, I will be sharing that with everybody out there. Good to see you too, brother. I'll be in Midland, Texas this weekend. How far are you guys from there? Greenville versus Midland. I'm not sure how far that is.
I'm in New York, so I'm far.
Yeah,
I'm very far. I'm very, very far from that.
Yeah, you're very far. You're like all the way down.
Further south in Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
Hotter and hurricane season kicks up.
Sam, why is he goes further and further south in Texas and it's getting hotter and hurricane season kicks up? Dude, man, I know this Thursday we're supposed to be expecting some sort of tornado or so we'll see. It's getting kind of scary.
Chill, bro.
Get you on a plane
to Texas. not there. Not if there's hurricanes coming up. Like that's insane. I'm gonna stay
that time of the year, bro.
In New York, where it's nice, you know. Where you know, I just gotta
it's
wear my
gunshots.
But that's good, man. Tornadoes are fun to hang out in. Nice.
Yeah, no, not for me.
Nice.
I give him my hair.
Snap. Yeah, no, that's cool, bro. This this coming up. When is it? Next weekend. Yeah, next weekend I'll be in ZykaCon in Pennsylvania. That's right. That's how I roll, baby. ZykaCon. I'll be out there hanging out with my friend Jonathan Syfax. We are going to be chilling, walking the floor. So if you're at that show, come out, chill. Fun fact, tornadoes only occur in the United States.
Yes.
It's a fun fact.
Like really? That. They know that.
I like that.
That's because the chemtrails, bro. We're messing with the weather pattern. Stop acting up.
Okay. All right.
The chemtrails, bro.
Yeah, no doubt. And then in April, C2E2 in Chi-Town.
R2D2.
Chicago. C2E2. I will be out there. I don't have the cool graphics. I'll have them next week so that you guys don't have to look at us. They also occur in Canada. So it's like a North America thing. Mexico. What else? So C2E2, I will be walking the floor out there. Johnny C is going to be out there. I was talking to him yesterday. I was on a show with them. We're talking about writing yesterday. That was awesome. Indie Comics Relay. Big shout out to them.
Yeah.
I will be out there. Next month in May, I'm working on something in May for the release of Rust 5377. Word. So if you haven't done so yet, make sure you pre-order Rust 5377. Go to my website, or you can go to the Any One World website, anyoneworld.com. It's coming spring 2024, May. I'll tell you, it's in May.
I like that.
But more of that information will be coming. Then in July, I'm going to Plastic City Comic Con. Out in Massachusetts.
So isn't that like a stripper event?
Which one?
Plastic City?
No. Plastic City is a comic book convention. Give them some love. We got to give Keith Leeson some love, baby. Keith
That's Leeson, right.
Give him some love. Yeah.
I got some love for you, baby.
Keith Leeson has a comic book convention called Plastic City Comic Con. So check that out. It's a one-day show. July 20th, if you're in Massachusetts, go out there. August, I will be at Wicked Comic Con.
And a brother get wicked.
Wicked Comic Con in Boston. I will be out there. Boston. And then in September, Baltimore Comic Con.
Baltimore.
Is where I will be hanging out.
Yeah, I know.
That was Hollywood. No. The Plastic City is actually, I forget what the name of the city in Massachusetts. They call it Plastic City. That's the reason why they had the convention there. They moved it since, but the city was nicknamed Plastic City, is what they had the convention there. And then in October, I'll be at the New York Comic Con. So New York Comic Con in October. So that's going to be what I'll be doing. And then also I want to give a big shout out to Hades, ASAP Imagination. The Dead of Night issue number 2 is out now. So if you want to pick it up, go to ASAPimagination.com, or you can go to my website as well, getyourmeds.com, and you can hit the link to pick up a copy of issue number 2, which I wrote. And I want to give them a big shout out for letting me, be part of that world. So thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate you. And let's see, what else we got going on, Sammy? What else?
Oh, that's it. We got the boys coming in next month.
That's right. That's
the reunion. Boys are back in town.
20 years,
bro. Yeah. I remember when we first met, we were sitting in a live drawing class.
Yes. Plastic guys. Maybe I should head to Plastic City.
That's crazy. I remember you were sitting to my right. And I remember we started talking because I think we were all getting frustrated with all of the male models. I was like, all right, this is getting tired by now. I was like, so we started talking about comics, and then you showed me your Duck comic book. and that's how it started.
But it wasn't Wonder Duck. It was another one.
Yeah, it was like a hip hop.
It was like a hood
yeah.
Duck.
Yeah.
Danny Duck. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I still have that copy in my.
Oh snap!
In the garage.
Right. Yeah. We're about to bring out some stuff next week. So not next week. Next month, April 16th. So make sure you come and check us out. It'll be
We're going to the archives.
That's right. It'll be Aníbal. It'll be Jonathan.
You want to know the history of Crazy Comics, bro?
Historia.
We got some stuff, man.
That's when we met Aníbal. So that's the anniversary of us meeting Aníbal. Actually, is coming up. That's the 20 years. Because I've known you longer than that, and I've known Jonathan longer than that. You met Jonathan through me.
Yes,
when you were Crazy Comics. I brought him into one of our
at the same time.
Yo, well, we went at your old apartment when we met Jonathan, right? It was you. It was Robert Garrett, rest in peace. And you had another
Robert Nunez.
Was Robert there? Nah.
Yes. I have a photo of us in the. I have a it's a grainy video because it was one of those old school webcams back in those days. But it was we were in my office, and it was me, you, Rob Garrett, Robert Nunez,
really,
Jonathan. And we were talking about, I think it was either the Cast of Craze magazine that we were doing. It was something we were talking about our titles and incorporating it. It was that was one of our first meetings.
Yeah. Damn, I didn't realize Rob was part of that. I thought Rob
he came with Wizzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was cool. Yeah. So that was way before. I think that was maybe 3 years before.
And then Rob Garrett bounced, it was
Tracy
Gandolfo and Chase.
Gandolfo. That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
Gandolfo.
It was a weird phase in our time.
I wonder what he's up to. I know Tracy's still doing his thing. Big shout out to Tracy Alford. He's got animation. He does 3D animation. So
yeah, Tracy's doing his thing online. He's always posting new stuff.
Yep.
I'd love to do him to do a featured animation. I see a lot of little clips. I'd love to see like a fully produced project.
Yeah.
But Gandolfo now, I know that he had a dark side to him. There was a dark side. There was a dark element to him. So I don't know what he ended up. I remember he shared this story with me. I was like, don't ever say that with me again. And I'm not going to go on the air with it, but and blow up his spot. But it was dark. And I was like, yo, dude, I don't want to hear that stuff.
I remember. So at these conventions, we always, to cut costs, we share rooms. And I know you shared a room with him one day. And that was
over.
Yeah.
It was over. It was over.
That was some Blair Witch Project stuff.
It was, man. I was like, I slept with one eye open.
That was some Paranormal Activity. You woke up and he was standing over you looking
at him. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm lucky to be alive, bro. Especially after he shared his story with me. And then I woke up and he's standing right there. I was like, no, bro. No. Never again.
Snap.
Yeah, man. Wow. You guys could have gone, my body would have been wrapped up
in where's Sam? He had to leave.
Yo, it was scary. It was I was like, yeah, I gotta cut that up. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, we've had some adventures. Congratulations. Oh, thanks, Lori. Appreciate you. Big shout out to Lori Cunningham. She's gonna be on our show next week.
Cunningham.
She will be on the show next week, so tune in for that.
Yes.
First time on the show too. It's gonna be a good time.
She has the last name of a famous TV character.
Yeah. You're talking Happy Days. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, Happy Days. Saturday, what a day. Moving all week with you. Remember that? That was the best time.
I do remember that. Yes. I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it.
Remember it.
No, what were you watching? Chapolin?
I was a little kid. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was. I was learning English, bro. I didn't watch Happy Days. What I look like to you? 2 years old? What are you talking about?
Oh, damn. Oh, man. Look at you. Don't hate me, bro. Look at this. F-R-E.
Yo, but not for nothing, though. For nothing though, those old school sitcoms had the best songs though.
The best, bro.
The best theme songs. Yes. The best theme songs were back in the day.
Take the good, you take the bad, you take the both. Facts of life.
I mean, you can go on and on and on with these songs. You know, what I mean? We could do a whole show on these songs.
Oh, my real name is Richie.
Wow.
LA.
What up, Dan?
What's going on, man? Yes. Here we are, face to face. A couple.
Imagine if George had learned English through Happy Days. Oh man! Hey! Yes. Hey! I call everybody Fonzie.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing.
Yes.
So we're gonna call L.A. Richie next.
L.A. Richie.
Next week, L.A. Richie. That's gonna be a good time. But Sam, let's talk about the topic that we're gonna talk about today. The
topic. Let's talk about it.
It's time for your medicine.
We discuss Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, ElfQuest, and the rights to your intellectual property. Survey says.
Okay.
What's this about?
So, all right. So I don't know how many people in the chat know about ElfQuest. And I would think that a lot of people do. But I don't think that they were as popular as Turtles.
Nah.
Right? I think ElfQuest had like a niche.
Because it didn't like break probably out into the mainstream the way Turtles
right,
did.
Right. So ElfQuest, it was created back in like the late 70s, right?
Back in the days.
Wendy Pini, I believe her name was. It was a comic book that they actually pitched it to Marvel.
And they got pissed and dismissed.
Yeah, Marvel and DC were like, nah, bro, we're not ready for that kind of
stuff. Get out of here.
The artwork was something completely different than what they had seen. You know what I mean? Like Wendy was drawing like the manga and like that kind of stuff, which was unseen back then. And she had incorporated, you know, Kirby style stuff, but it was something different. I got three. Oh, snap, really? Which ones, Mike? The ones that Marvel put out or the original ones that they put out? Because Marvel did pick them up eventually.
Yes, right? Marvel did pick it up eventually, yes.
Yeah.
Because they had to save face.
Right.
It was making money, and they were like, yo.
Well, see, but that's the thing about that, right? So they pitched it. They got rejected. Nobody would touch it, right? Nobody would touch it. So I know more. What is that? I know more about ElfQuest than that. Oh, okay, Lou, I got you. Original. Oh. Nice. The creators were at Baltimore last year.
Really?
Don't think I've ever heard of ElfQuest.
Anybody goes to Baltimore.
Yeah, that's Baltimore's the spot.
Yo, how come they coming in? You know who's going to be out in one of the conventions? I'm going to be is Kevin Eastman.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, hand him a little duty.
Give me a little duty.
I'm just saying, hand him the comic. Grow up.
Nobody wants to play with me.
So Hugo's never heard of ElfQuest, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a story about a group of elves who were outsiders and they were trying to find a way to fit in. And it was basically autobiographical, essentially, because Wendy was adopted and she grew up in a very abusive household who, even though she had this talent of drawing,
her parents hated her.
Her father was an abusive alcoholic and her mom just didn't want her to draw, right? So this was very autobiographical, this was very near and dear to her heart, which is why she refused to sell or change anything about the story, which is why it didn't get picked up or more people haven't heard about it, because she refused to change anything of the story. So I guess my question for you, Sam, is why did you think we should talk about this? Talk to me.
Because it's a tale. It is a tale. Cutter. Who's Cutter?
Cutter is one of the elves.
Interesting. So it's a tale that most people are not aware of, right? It's the warning signs, it's the horror stories, it's the things that it's those uphill battles when you're trying to get your product out into the mass market and you're reliant on the big studios and the big companies. They don't tell you the pain that goes behind the scenes. They don't tell you the sacrifices that you have to make behind the scenes. They don't tell you about what happens when you don't have the right representation and you sign your product away. And most of the times, the people who are licensing or getting the rights to your product, most of the time, they really don't have any intent other than to keep you on the shelf so it doesn't compete with somebody else, with something else that they have going on.
Right.
So sometimes you just sit on the shelf. And so they don't share those warning signs of things to look for. So I thought this was a great case because that's just one of many. When you look at Mike Krunkel, he went through the same thing. The creators of Alvin and the Chipmunk went through the same thing, right? So, I thought this was a great opportunity to discuss, the things to be aware of or to avoid, or to even have the question of what are you willing to sacrifice in order to get that fame? Because there's going to be a sacrifice involved, whether it's mental health, whether it's your personal brand, or whether it's friendships and family.
I think that what happened with and what happened with them, it happened to them too. I think what happens is we're so excited and we want our product to succeed so bad. That's what they say, right? With Fox, though, I don't know if that's still happening. But I think what happens is, right, they we want to get put on, right? We want this to happen for us. And so sometimes we just say yes to anything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it happened to them. They were at a convention or wherever they were, and somebody told them, hey, I got a publishing company, right? I got a publishing company. I'm going to print your books out. It's going to look great. The
paper full color.
Amazing. Full color. It's going to be amazing. Guy goes out to Detroit. They send them original artwork because back then it wasn't digital files. Original artwork. It takes that guy forever to print it. They almost thought it was never going to happen. The book finally comes out. It's in crappy paper, right? It's poorly produced. It sucks, right? It's no good. So no. Before that, Rich, which is a husband, Richard, actually flew out to Michigan to get the work back, and he got it back. The book is printed, it's produced, it comes out. They sell 10,000 copies, bro. As crappy as it was, they sell 10,000 copies. So they still sold what they had to sell, but they never saw any of that money because it was a bad deal.
Yeah.
So it happened to them. You know what I mean? But the product was so good that even crappy as it was still moving units. And so people started. So then they felt like, wait, we got something here. And they kept going with it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's the other thing, right? You have to have good product. Your product has to be good regardless. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can get put on whatever you want, but you have to have some good stuff that you're putting out there. But I thought that was kind of a cool story, man. Like he was like, yo, I'm going to go get this art.
Well, you know, she was so fixated on breaking into the film world, right?
Well, she wanted a cartoon.
She wanted a cartoon. She was so fixated on it so that she made a lot of sacrifices that put a lot of strain on their relationship, right? And she also shelved her project to go after. Like there was an opportunity to work in animation, and she ran to go work on The Hobbit, the animated film with Ralph Bakshi. And then she 2 weeks in, she dropped it and went back realizing that she doesn't want to work for somebody else. She wants to do her own. So she was torn, right? And then he was like the glue that kept them together. He was the one that was like trying to get it going and try to keep it alive in the publishing world as she bounced back and forth between project to project. I think there was another project that she was doing storyboards on for a while. And
her cartoon.
Not her cartoon. It was
at the end of it. Yeah, she was doing storyboards. She was working. Yeah, she did Beauty and the Beast. She did like
Beauty and the Beast. Yes.
Yeah,
she did. She put a project on hold. Go after. So she was chasing a lot of different things, and he was the one who kept them focused because he saw the potential in her and in her project in the project. Yeah. So, but because of her blind ambition, they made some poor judgment, poor decisions out of desperation. Because they wanted to see it. That's how it ended up in the wrong hands. And they had to fight to get their, you know, original projects back. They had to fight to get, you know, to get the property off of the wrong hands and move into the right hands. So, as you know, I guess it's how desperate are you to break through and what are you willing to compromise?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you see it that way, that you see it as her being the one that kind of like made the quote unquote mistakes and she was making the poor decisions. I think it was a mutual thing. I think they both kind of were like, yo, yeah, this is going to work. Like, we should do this. You know what I mean?
But the way I took the story was he was so in love with her that he was going to, whatever she wanted to do, he supported. You know, I mean, he's the one who, you know, he moved everything. He was the one to get the original art back. He flew and made it happen and got the artwork back. Like he was doing all of the things. He was keeping the house in order while she went off and did other things. Right. Cause he was in love.
But she was the talent though.
Right.
But like he did it. I mean, he did the sales and he learned how to become a publisher because because at one point he was like, all right, nobody's picking this up. I'm going to learn how to do this. And he figured it out. He figured out how to do all that stuff. But I think part of it too is like he knew that he had somebody who was very talented and he wanted to see her stuff succeed. Yeah. But I think she also at some point she also sacrificed and said, you know what, I'm gonna choose my family. I'm gonna choose the people I love over my product, over my character, or whatever. And that's a tough decision. I mean, you know, as a creator, like. You know, having to make choices, you made them. You know what I'm saying? You made them.
It wasn't over her character. It was choosing family over chasing the dream of getting it into a film, making it into an anime.
All right. So she had to put ElfQuest. Right. What I'm saying is ElfQuest had to be put on the back burner
and she had to focus on her family, which is the only way that they were able to, you know, save the marriage, right? Because otherwise they would have been divorced. And today they're still, you know, they're still together as far as this goes, right? They're still together. But then what I was telling you about that, and the reason why I brought up the turtles is because it's interesting how, right, she had to put that stuff on hold in order to save the marriage. When you look at, you know, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, they were best buds. And their friendship fell apart because of how successful they became.
Yeah.
Right? Because they chose success over the friendship, in a sense. But it got them, well, like when I say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I know Lou said she knows more about ElfQuest and TMNT. A lot of people will say, yeah, I know who the Ninja Turtles are. You know what I mean? Might have never heard of ElfQuest. Like a Hugh, I'm sure Hugo probably heard of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but never heard of ElfQuest. And it's because of that. It's because of that sacrifice. And I wonder, like, what would you have done, Sam? Would you have gone the route of ElfQuest, or would you have gone the route of TMNT?
The difference is, it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's, for me, it's what I appreciate about what she did was she wanted to keep the purity of her characters intact. Right. She didn't want to compromise the identity. That's how I am about duty. Right. But licensing and expansion, I'm fine with that as long as it's true to the character and I have my say in the entire equation. I'm not going to give it away. And I think that's the difference. I think like that's what tore them apart. Like one wanted to do it one way, the other wanted to do it the other way. And so they just, and it just became disruptive. And that's what happens when, you know, I think what happens when you see you're so close to breaking through, people will risk it all.
I love you. I've been calling the rat Sticks for years. Sticks instead of Splinter.
Splinter, that's crazy. Right? No, but I say for like for me, it's like the reason why. I mean, I shared the story with you off air. I mean, how many of the people that I met over the few years that just wanted outright? They just, you know, so everything that I've been approached in, they just want to take the rights. And I'm like, no, I'm not giving away my rights. It's my baby, you know, and I'm not going to give it away. So I think, but I'm fine with that. I'm fine with if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you know what? I did my best, but I'm not willing to compromise. And I think because you've seen it, look at what happened with Hero Bear and the kid, 10 years in limbo. I think it was with Universal, 10 years in limbo. They picked it up, they shelved it. And it took him 10 years to get his rights back. And how much money and lawyer fees and all that stuff to get your rights back, right? So it was like, is it worth it? Look at, what's his name? We had him, he was a guest on our show. He had the World of Quest, right? He was on Kids WB and sold his rights off. So they went and produced it internationally. He didn't see any money from it. They went and changed the course of it. He didn't see anything from it. And he doesn't own it, right? And all he got is his book. So it was like, you know, at what cost, right? At what cost?
Well, yeah, success at all costs includes cost of friendship and relationships. What up, Jerry?
Well, what's up?
Yeah, it's been a minute. I think that, all right, so ElfQuest, right? At one point, I think the guy who bought the rights or who thought that this was about to happen, they're about to make a book, they're about to make a cartoon or a movie, whatever it was, ended up being that he didn't want to keep they went with him because he was the one that did the Crow adaptation. He did the Conan adaptation. So she felt like, oh my God, this is the guy because he does serious fantasy adaptations of books. Turns out he wanted to make a movie for his 5-year-old kid. So he was definitely gonna you know, I don't want to say dumb it down, but he was definitely gonna make it for kids. It wasn't gonna be this serious, you know, made for adult kind of movie that she wanted to make. So she was like, I'm out. Can't do it. Then you look at the turtles, right? If you look at the turtles, the original turtles are very violent. It's a very violent comic book. Mm-hmm. And so, but when Playmates and when all these other companies came and said, hey, what if we give them colorful bandanas and make it more kid friendly? What do you feel about that? They were like, cool. As long as we keep the rights to the comics, you guys can do whatever you want.
If you want, right.
Right. And that's what propelled them into, you know, just, now they're a $15 billion company, right?
Yeah.
So how much do you give up? And that's always going to be the question when you're creating your own stuff, right? is how much are you willing to give up and how much are you willing to change that product for, you know, for success, for money, for all that stuff. I want Mighty Max back. Wow, Mighty Max. The thing with companies buying rights is not necessarily to do something with it. It could be for their competition not to do something with it. Yeah, and that's what happens. They shelve
it. It happens in the music industry. It happens in
well, you know about that stuff. You know about the whole music stuff.
Yeah, that's what happened. I was with a record company and you know, our group, and they put us on the back burner because they had six other groups that they want to release first. So we weren't going to get released for 2 years. By that time, whatever we created would have been old news. Yeah. And so we had to get out of that. You know, so it's, you know, and I think that's what happens. You know, the agents will intentionally go out and seek your product to non-compete with their existing products.
Yeah.
Right. And then people think, oh, I'm going to get a nice hefty check up front, but then they own the rights. Right. And they say, oh, we'll give you, you know, a fraction of a percent in royalties. Right. You're never going to see the royalties because it's never going to hit the shelves. It's never going to hit the stores. Right. I think that's the it's one of those things like when the creators of Alvin and the Chipmunks, when they got their rights back, any future development, it had to be. There had to be a timeline and production team involved in the contract in order for them to move forward.
It was crazy. Lou has a comment too. She says she knew a guy in Hollywood who would buy scripts and keep them on the shelf. He bought 30 Days of Night. Thankfully, that one was made. Wow. I saw another video, bro, where they were talking about like these artists that work for Marvel and DC, right? I think it was Marvel specifically, who would create characters, right? But what they did was, and they told them, okay, we'll give you some money for them or whatever. And like, what, $5,000, whatever it was. They would make them sign, right? They wouldn't make them sign a contract. That's not necessarily a contract. But what they would do is they would put the contract on the back of their paychecks. So they would have to sign the paycheck. You want to get paid? You got to sign the paycheck to get paid. But the contract's in the back of the freaking check. Wow. So you have to sign the contract. Even if you, you know what I'm saying, to keep copyright laws.
Dirty.
You know, they would, yo, how crazy. When I saw that, I was like, wait, what?
No, but not only that, I think, and what creatives don't understand either, when you're working for a company, there's a clause that if you use any of their materials, their papers, their pen, if you're working on the clock, on their time, and you create anything, they own it.
Right.
Most people, when they hire for the, you know, company, they don't realize that. So they're using their printer, paper, their pen, they're using their computers. Now that company owns your property because they paid for your use. You know,
that was the whole Kirby thing, right?
Yeah. You know, and I think people don't look at those things. They just, I'm working for a company. It's not an art company. No, there's a clause in everything. You know, all the stuff that you use, and if you do it around time, we own it. We have the right to challenge it, and you give up those rights. So there's a lot of things that people are not aware of. They think, oh, it'll never happen to me, right? There's that it'll never happen to me mentality. But there's all these horror stories out there that people don't learn from because we think we're the exception.
Yeah, I think Alan Moore, you know, when he wrote The Watchmen, right? He thought he had a cool contract. They were like, "All right, listen, we'll sign the contract. You know, it'll be a year. If we don't do anything with it, you can take the rights back." He was like, "Bet." DC still prints out Watchmen books, so he's never been able to get the rights back. He's never been able to get the rights back, bro.
That's crazy.
I work in software development. If I write some program, if it's in their space, they have the right to assert ownership.
Yeah.
Right. I was approached by a film company wanting my little Messiah, my title Messiah when we first started. I convinced them to take something else. They went bust. And after 2 years, the rights returned to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's the risk, right? So we think, you know, sometimes they'll say, hey, we want the licensing for this. When we produce it, you'll get paid. You just got jacked, right? So it's like, you know, so that's another thing to avoid. You know, it's like, you know, you got to pay to play, right?
Right.
And it's like, and sometimes we're like, oh, I got a deal with Sony.
Yeah.
How much you get paid? Well, not until the movie gets produced. What do you mean? When is it going to be produced? I don't know, but they said it's going to get produced, right? And so it's all this stuff. And then you look like a knucklehead because you gave up everything.
Yeah. Where Sony just keeps, and that's the reason why Sony makes Madam Web, Morbius, Kraven, because as long as they keep making these movies based on those characters, they can keep the rights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so they're slick. They try to be slick. But what suffers is the product, and what suffers are the fans, because we're getting crappy stuff, you know, simply because these guys won't give up the rights to these characters. And that's the thing. I mean, it's a sad thing, dude. Like a lot of these artists died broke. You know, look at the Superman creators and Bill Finger. You know, like the way they were jerked. What is it? The paid me, they lost out. I made it into a comic called Person. Yeah, 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 man. I mean, you gotta be careful, dude. You gotta be careful because, you know, you never know. Look at even with duty, right? Think about this, right? And we can't prove this. Mm-hmm. I don't think I should mention it, but whatever. Circle of confusion, right? On the verge, mm-hmm. right? What happens? Nothing happens. You know, I think they were in talks with a lot of studios.
There was a lot of studios.
What comes out before you
had Aliens in the Attic come out. You had all these things come right out afterwards. And it's but you can't prove it. They just took it and they spun it. But there was a scene where the aliens in the attic in the toilet,
right?
So all this stuff. But you can't. There's nothing you can do about it, right? You know, because once people see your property and they see the potential, they could just reframe it under their banner, and now they own it. That's why they say. That's why if anybody's telling you when you submit that you have to sign a release form that if they have anything existing that you can't sue them. Then don't even submit it to them because that means they're probably going to rip your story.
And it's funny because a lot of like publishing companies are putting that in their contracts.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They're putting that clause in there.
And then we're like, then no one's going to have this story. Right. Next thing you know, you see it on the shelf. I mean, yeah. and we've seen it when we first did Licensing Expo back in 2008, a big global licensing franchise approached, wanted the rights.
Yeah.
With giving 3%. So we get 3%, but they have the full rights and they can do whatever they want with it. And I was like, hell no. They even followed us to San Diego Comic-Con.
Right.
From New York to San Diego, still trying to convince.
Yeah.
Right? But wanted to rob me blind. I was like, I know a Joker when I see one. Yeah. I was like, I was in the music business and I signed a blood contract. I'm not going to do it again. Right. And I was like, at least I learned enough. So that, you know, so I had to, you know, I was like, no, the right time, the right moment in life will come along. I said, because I know it's a viable IP. It's just, I'm not going to sacrifice anything and compromise because I want to hold my head up high when it's there, because I know that I had a say in how it was made.
Yeah. And that's why you have to like get your copyright straight. You know, 3% of 3% of what? Profits, revenue, some BS formula where you lose no matter what.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why I think copyrights are so important. Trademarks are so important. And doing them the right way. Not the poor man's. I know this is the whole poor man's. But that doesn't help. It really doesn't help. Like, because what happens is you can't go to court with it. You know what I mean? Yeah, sure. You own the copyright. But if you want to go to court with it, you're probably not going to win that case. And part of the reason why you go to these, like where you take somebody to court, is to be able to not only obviously win the case, but also part of winning that case is paying your lawyer fees.
Yeah.
Because if you can't pay the lawyer fees, you might as well have lost the case. So what happens with a copyright when you actually do a copyright is that those fees are paid when you win the case.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's something that you can't get with a poor man's copyright. You know what I'm saying? So it's important to do a lot of that stuff. And, you know, something we don't think about it. And we're just kind of posting everything on Facebook and, you know, showing characters and all this other stuff, stories. And the next thing you know, it's like, damn, that is exactly like the character that I had.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Give me 1 second, Sam. Keep it rocking. Keep it rocking.
I think he has to go to the bathroom. So, it's that time. It's that time for George. He ate too much. But so it was interesting. If you haven't seen the documentary, I think it's called The Biggest Mistake Marvel Make or Marvel Made. I forget what it's called. I'll put the link in the summary after the show ends. But it's a fantastic documentary and interview with the creators and where they're really transparent on what they share and the journey on trying to get a popular brand licensed. So when does the consideration of getting an agent come up? I think, yeah, so... When we were represented, when Circle of Confusion picked up duty, they found it was through Licensing Expo.
They found us. Yeah,
they found us, and they also went to San Diego Comic Cons because we were one of many clients. They also had Robert Kirkman. That's when they were shopping around Invincible, and they got picked up as a cartoon with MTV. I think it was. They did a
short. Motion comic. It was a motion comic.
Yeah. So they were shopping Robert Kirkman. They were shopping Duty. They shopped The Matrix. They had that brand. They got all those films. They got a big, huge client list.
Yeah, they have big clients, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when they took, you know, they took us to one of their industry parties that they were hosting, and it was like, oh, look at all this. And it was like, wow. So they approached us. I think what happens is that's why it's so important. It's so important to create a buzz. It's so important to when you're at a convention. To your booth, your display, your presentation, your energy, and to create a buzz. Because what happens is it'll be like flies to honey. It's gonna attract people, and they're gonna see it, and they're gonna want to go and say, "Hey, what? Inquire. What is this about?"
Yeah, no, true. And to that, just to add to that, also remember last week we were talking about keeping your head up, right, and being engaging. You never know who's coming to your table. You never know what opportunity you may miss because you were looking down. You know what I mean? And I know some artists do it because they want to look like they're busy, and people sometimes like, oh, what are you drawing kind of thing. But it's important to do that because, like you said, a lot of these people, especially at the big shows, like at the San Diego Comic, if you're paying to go to San Diego Comic Con and you got a booth, do not sit there and look down because you never know who's coming to your table. It could be a producer. It could be anybody. That's
exactly my point because the lady from Disney, she was a senior vice president of acquisitions. She picked up Duty at San Diego Comic Con. Handed me the business card and said, I'm interested in your product, right? And so you never know who's coming at your table.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
So I think that's I think there's an important message to this. I think you have to be really comfortable with the sacrifice you're going to make and understand the world you're getting into, because at the end of the day, they're in the business of making business and owning everything. And if you're willing just to sell it, then sell it.
Well, you know what it is? The contracts are also very complicated. So you're not going to understand what the hell the contract says. No. You know what I mean? You got to give it to a lawyer. Yeah, word. So by page three, you're like, you know what? Where do I sign? Like, I guess I can trust you kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? Just like, for here with. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Who's the English?
Word. I'm like, what are we? 1776? What are you doing over here?
Man, I wish I had a copy of it. The contract that I had with Sony Records when we were in the music business, it was like an encyclopedia. We were just young and we weren't smart enough to get a lawyer. We just signed the damn thing. We didn't realize we signed.
Because you were excited that you were getting put on, right? Like, you finally made it. We're about to do this. They're telling you, you're going to make this money. You're going to make this. You're going to make that. You know, they're just selling you a dream at that point.
Yeah,
and you're young and you know, you don't know.
Yeah, we were just dumb. But we were excited, right? And then we realized that we had nothing. We got nothing in return.
Yeah. But I think to answer Hugo's question about, you know, when you consider getting an agent, when the buzz is that big, the agent comes to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the agent comes to you. I think, and never use the agent that's referred to you by the client.
Or the one that's charging you.
Right. Right. The agent makes their money off of the deals that they make.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And that's the other thing. If they're asking you to pay up front, no bueno. If the licensor is approaching you and recommending agents, don't go with those agents, right? Because they align to them. So they're gonna get you a shady deal. You want to get somebody that's not connected, that's reputable, that's gonna have your best interest at heart.
Yeah. Gotta get to that point. Right, bro.
Yeah.
Those speaking contracts make it very
hard. Same thing with lawyers. Don't use any lawyers that these people from Hollywood have recommended. Go and get your own lawyer that's going to go and take care of you, that's going to have your best interest in mind, because they're all connected, right? And they're going to work that angle, and they're going to tell you what you need to do. It's instead of you telling them what they need to do for you. When they're telling you what you need to do, it's like, no. This is how this works. I'm paying you to take care of me. So go and take care of me. And so I think that's the biggest thing you got to understand too. When you're paying for somebody's services, they work for you.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. And I think what happens is a lot of these aspirants or these new to the game, they're so excited about it. And then you got these attorneys telling you what needs to happen because they're aligned with the big dogs, right? And you don't know if they're on their salary. You don't know if they get a kickback. You don't know any of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So do your homework. The due diligence and make sure that you protect yourself, because the only one that's going to protect you is you, bro.
For sure, man, for sure. And I mean, going back to what we're mentioning with the ElfQuest and the Teenage Mutant Turtles, they sold a lot of units, right?
A lot of units.
They created a buzz. People yes. wanted the product, and that's what we got to get to, right? Regardless of who picks you up, who doesn't pick you up, you still got to hustle.
You got to
hustle it. You got to hustle it. You know, you got to hustle your product. You got to have a good product. You know what I mean? And you really got to get it out. Part of, like, you went to licensing even this year, for example. A lot of what they were saying was, how many units have you sold? What have you done? You know, because they don't want to get in on the, they don't want to do all the work. They don't want to do all that stuff. They're like, they want that thing to
but
be
it's
somewhere
sick. Like, it's I can cyclical just, because it's cyclical because there's going to be a period where they're going to be like, they're going to look for those diamonds in the rough, right? Wow. And they're going to, you know, they're going to go out there because you're going to have those that are really talented and they know what good looks like and they're going to go after it, whether you have a track record or not, because they see the potential in the property, the IP. But then you're going to have the other ones who are like looking to get promoted and they know that their corporate leader is saying they need to meet this criteria. They have to have sold this many units, have this many people following them on social media. I mean, just look at something like Dragon Con. Dragon Con told me that while they love my artwork, they didn't feel like I had a big enough fan base. So try again when I grow my fan base. Yeah. I was like, holy crap, right? So I was like, that's just a convention, bro, that I'm paying for. I'm not, you're not doing me any favors. I'm paying for it, right? So now imagine the big boys that their whole game is they want to not spend a lot. They want to make more than they spend.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy with even with, like, for example, the Turtles, right? Things aligned with them, like everything just went right because they were an indie publisher, right? They were trying to put out their comic. Playmates at the time was trying to get into the toy business, so they were kind of like the small fish in a big pond kind of thing, trying to make a name for themselves. So they took a chance on a property that was on the come up as well, and like everything just kind of aligned to the point where they were able to get that deal. You know what I mean? And then do all that stuff. And sometimes that's what happens, right? But I truly believe that fortune favors the well-prepared. Yeah. And if your stuff is ready to rock, you're just waiting for that luck, right? That good luck to come through. But you have to still be ready. Because if you're not ready, then it doesn't matter. Somebody can come up to you and say, I like your product. Is it a complete story? Yeah, no, it's just an ash can. I'll have this ready by, you know, next year. And you don't finish it. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What's going to happen? So, yeah, you have to be ready and you have to have your stuff ready to rock and roll. What are you looking for? You looking for something?
No, I was looking at, I just noticed that maybe that's old. No, I was looking at on Facebook, some of the comments. You have to be ready. I think, I think so. Sweat, I always thought it was sweat equity. You know, number one, what's your intent? What's the reason why you're doing this? Is it because you're chasing a film deal? Then your product will probably sacrifice. I think make the best product and then promote the hell out of it, and then things will start aligning. You'll start seeing opportunities. You know, you got to hustle. You know what? We were at Texoma, right? And William Russ was there, right? The guy was hustling, right? The guy
was hustling. William.
Every customer that came by, he was pitching, right? And right, but then directly opposite us, we had a guy head down the whole time, right? So you're going to get what you put into it. I don't know any creator that wouldn't love to see their product on the big screen, wouldn't want to see their product on a toy shelf, right? Everybody has that dream. And if you're saying no, you're crazy, you're lying, right? But at what cost, right? What are you willing to sacrifice? Because what it requires, and it's the one thing that most independents don't like to do, they don't like the business side of it. Research on the industry and on IPs and on agreements and fact finding and finding out who does what. People don't want to do that, right? So that's where the risk comes into play. What is it? Tried to book a speaker at cons last year. If any world turned down flat, grew it for a year, and now they're asking me. Definitely got to hustle. Yeah, you got to hustle.
Yeah. So you know? When he went out there, they were like, "Nope, sorry."
Yeah.
A year later, you know, because you hustled. Because these people are looking. You think they're not? They're paying attention.
Yes.
I mean, they're paying attention, and when you're making noise, they hear it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They hear it.
I mean, this year alone, I've had 4 different convention promoters reach out to me. Right, because they've seen me at other shows throughout Texas. Like, I'm working on really hustling and getting out there. the more people see you, the more you're out there, the more you become relevant, right? They see that you're serious about what you're doing, and then, you know, things will just start happening for you. This story was so important because you see what people go through, and I've experienced it myself. And you know, when I did spend a lot of money going to licensing, but every person either wanted me to do the work to make their life easier or wanted to own it directly outright, right? And then most of the companies were international, and I don't have the capital to have international representation and get copyrights for international and trademarks internationally. So I was like, I want to start domestic. And so that was me. I was like, well, you know, I'm going to have to pass until it's the right, you know, the deal.
I remember when we did it, like the first time we did it, I remember all of the overseas people who wanted to put stuff on phones. At the time they were doing yes, screensavers on phones. And they were like, yeah, we want your character on phones. And we were like, I don't know about that. Like, you know, because you don't know, like, what are you going to do with my character?
There was that Korean company that says, we will build a booth for you at the Korean licensing trade show in South Korea. Well, South Korea, I think it was. They said, we will build it and we'll print everything. We want to represent it and we want to promote it out there.
Right.
I was like, you know, but it was circle of confusion. They said you want to start domestically and then brand out. But when you do internationally, there's a lot of things that'll put your property at risk.
Yeah, the lady who created the ElfQuest said she often wonders what would have happened if she would have taken some of the deals that were given to her at that point. But then she thinks about what happened because she didn't. And sometimes it's about being patient.
Yes.
It's about being patient and just choosing the right thing. You know what I mean? Not that you got to turn down just because you're being arrogant or whatever, but because it's not the right thing to do right now. You know what I mean? I think something tells you that sometimes. You're like, yeah, maybe I should do this, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I think you gotta look yourself in the mirror, right? And I think the worst, we all live with regrets in life, right? You don't want to add that one to you. That's a big one, right? Yeah. So that you had something that you compromise, because if one person's interested, just somebody else is going to be interested, right? And I think you got to be patient. Look at what happened. Marvel shut them down. They went out there. They were the trendsetters in the independent movement, right? They were one of the first ones that transformed and showed that you can be an unknown and control your own IP. And that's what changed the narrative in the game. It created a buzz. It was like, oh, I can create my own. I don't need
Marvel. Because Cerebus was out at the time.
Yeah.
But they weren't selling the units that ElfQuest was selling.
Yeah. So, and it took that one, you know, the courage. It took courage for them to, you know what, we're still going to do it ourselves in a game that was dominated, that was unheard of at that time, right? So kudos to them, because they paved the way for all of us knuckleheads.
Yeah, yeah. And then by the time Marvel got it, they didn't change anything. They were like, we'll take it as is. Like, we'll just print it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to print it. Like,
it's already produced.
We're not changing
it. It already has that buzz. And now with our name attached to it, we'll sell even more.
Right.
And that's what happened. Yeah. Right. You know, and it's fascinating stories that are out there. But I mean, look up the story of the creators behind
ElfQuest.
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, Alvin and the Chipmunks. That's right. The other one that you were talking about.
Mike Krunkel, Hero Brand the Kid. I forgot his name. There's an interview that we did. I'll put the name in the chat, but he created World of Quest. At the time where we were being shopped, right? So he had his already running on television and we were so close. But he doesn't own it. Someone else owns it, right? And I forgot
the name. He still doesn't have the rights to it?
No.
Damn.
They own the rights. And so
Jason Cruz.
So he's doing freelance. You know, he takes on jobs on animation for, you know, animated shows, and he does storyboards. But you know, he was that close. He was that guy at that time. And
he gets credit for creating it, but I guess he doesn't have the rights to it.
Oh, he doesn't have the rights to it. You know, yeah, so
crazy.
It's crazy, right? That it's something that you created, that you grinded with, and then somebody, but it was, he was excited, and you know, it's like, oh, this is gonna be amazing. Yeah. And then you know, and he's working for a living as a freelance storyboard artist. So you never know. You know, it's look at with Bone. Bone was announced. It's going to be on Netflix. And then it dropped. Right? Yeah. It was announced. You know, Kevin Smith was talking about it. Jeff Smith was talking about it the whole time. Right? You saw a promo for it, and then it just vanished.
Yeah, yeah. Hugo, yeah. He's talking about Bill Watterson. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Kevin and Hobbs, only license printing his strips, no merch.
He refused.
He wouldn't yeah. do it. That was interesting to me, bro.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? What's crazy is I'm wondering, is it because nobody wanted to give him full creative control? If that's why he refused. Right. I don't, you know, what's the story behind the story? Because I mean, just like with what's his name? Jim Davis. He owned everything. He had right. total creative control. It's his baby, it's his way.
Charles Schultz. He owned everything.
Charles Schultz, right? Same thing.
I remember you've heard that story of Jim Davis, where the guy that was putting out the bootleg Garfield stuff, and instead of suing him, he said, "Yo, let's collaborate. Let's do something together."
And it made it even more popular.
And it made it even more popular. Yes. That guy got paid. He got paid. They're all on license. Yeah, yeah. All that stuff is bootleg.
Yeah, and what did Calvin and Hobbes do? It spawned copycats, right?
Oh,
copycat
yeah.
artists that
oh,
would
right. kind people
kind of ride that wave and yeah. You know, and create their own stuff.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why he didn't, I mean, from what I've heard and you know, videos that they have up there, again, you don't know what the true story is, but part of the reason why Bill Watterson didn't want you know, stuffed animals, for example, of even Hobbes, is because he didn't want people to know whether he was real or not. And he felt like if you had a stuffed animal, you'd make him your imaginary friend. And he never wanted that secret out. He didn't want people to know whether Hobbs was real or not. And he felt like by giving a kid, you know, stuffed animal of Hobbs, it would make it that he's not real.
Not only that, he also donated all the original artwork to the, I forgot what library or school.
Yeah.
And, same thing with the-
These guys did it too. Yeah.
ElfQuest. He owns-
Columbia University.
Yes, all that money in original art, which is crazy, right? So he wasn't looking at generational wealth. He was just looking at standing his ground.
From what I understand, Bill also had money. He came from money, from what I understand.
Yeah, but he also refused to do interviews. He didn't like doing interviews.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that kind of stuff works.
He was an introvert, right? You know, so it was one of those things where he didn't like the public eye, you know. And that was one, right? So, but he stood tall. He died on his sword, and he said, "This is how I'm going to do it," and that's it, you know. But then there are others that want it all, right? But then make the wrong choice with the wrong partners, or didn't read page 7, line 6, you know, dash 1402, right? So it's like, oh, I didn't see that part. So it's important that you do your homework, and I don't know. But again, at the end of the day, you got to make the right choice. But anytime you hear, pay me to represent you, when you hear, we want the license, but we'll pay you when we produce it. When we hear, hey, we got a good lawyer for you, or we have a good agent for you, and it's the client that you're working with. Nope. Those are warning signs. This is just a bunch of warning signs, and get it in. You know, if a publisher is saying, yeah, we want to publish it, get timelines, dates, all that stuff.
I think adaptations are most of the time change the original idea, right? It happened even in the Marvel universe, right? Like when you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever, the MCU, they changed a lot of that stuff from the books. It's not the same exact thing as the comics. Even within their own company, they made adjustments. So that kind of stuff is going to happen. It's whether or not you're willing to accept the changes that they're going to make to your property.
Yeah, look, if
you're okay with it, then you go with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's where you have to have that, that final say, right? So, yeah, you know, I think you got to trust the professionals in the industry that are working on the project, but you trust them after you get the contract you're looking for, right? So you get the contract you're looking for, then you work with the team that's going to produce it. You're going to have a creative direction. They're going to say, you know, I think this will work better on film and this will work. And you got to be able to compromise whatever that is. But as long as you have, you know, producer credits, you know.
Let me ask you this, Sam. Let me ask you this. Your story, right? Duty, right? They come to you and they say, okay, listen, we love it. We want to do it. We want to put, you know, we're not going to change anything. He's still going to be coming to Earth. He's going to have the same. Everything's going to be the same, except we need to change the planet. He can't come from the planet Uranus. Do you say, oh, hell no. he's got to come from Uranus? Or do you say, all right, we can change that? Like, how important is Uranus to you? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the question.
If they're saying they're targeting a specific demographic and that and they're afraid that they're going to find it too scatological for film adaptation, if that's the only the thing that I would have to adjust to, I would consider it as long as I don't change it in publishing.
If I found out that you turned the deal down because Uranus was the thing that I would freaking find you and kill you, because I'm like, really? That was it?
No, as long as I had the option to be able to decide,
yeah,
then I would be okay with it, because then I would make sure that I'm steering in the right direction. And I get it. You know, there's going to be some things that they do, you know, if they say this is our target audience that we're going after, we don't want to use this because of this, you know, whatever. I'm like, all right, maybe, sure. Because I have the say. But if I don't have say and they just want to go and just rip everything apart, then that's a different story. I wouldn't sign that deal. So as long as I have,
in other words, it's how they approach about it.
It's how they approach.
Hey, Sam, listen, man, we're thinking about not like, all right, sign here. By the way, we're changing Uranus to this. Okay, here, sign here.
Yeah,
like that is the way it's approached.
And as long as they don't want to make, you know, anything, don't give me any woke stuff. Don't give me any of that agenda stuff. Keep it true to the character, all that stuff. I'm fine. But as long as I have say, I think that's the biggest thing. I want to be able to steer the direction that he goes, and I want to be able to sit with it and be happy with it.
Well, I was having a conversation with Hades earlier today, and it's about respect, right? Yeah. It's about respect. Like, show me respect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Respect the property.
Yeah.
You know, have the decency to say to me, hey, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think?
Yes.
You know, like just respect me. That's all. That just show me that respect. That's all it is.
It's almost like a relationship, right? You were after that girl. You after the girl. You got the girl, and then you're not interested in the girl, right? So it's like no. I'm the same girl, sucker, right? So it's like remember why you approached me. Remember why we're here, right? Yeah, because the IP, you were attracted to the IP,
right?
And it's whole traditional sense. Yeah. So respect that. Respect me. Let's have a conversation. You can share your ideas. I'm not a jerk, right? But it's got to make sense in my head.
Yeah.
As long as it makes sense in my head, and I'm like, I can do that, then I'm good. But you gotta remember. I think what happens is you're important until this contract signed. Now you get out of our way. Let us do our thing.
Yeah.
That I won't tolerate.
I remember we had a guest on the show. He created El Muerto, Javier Hernandez created El Muerto. They did a movie. He was involved in the movie. He said it was a great experience.
And Wilma Valderrama.
Yeah, he played El Muerto, and he said he had a good experience making the movie. I don't think he had a bad experience making it. Actually, I think everything kind of went well with him.
He went to the premiere. He was in part of all of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they really made him a part of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It just didn't have the kind of longevity that he hoped it would.
I think it was too. I think the movies, and maybe that came out too close to The Crow, and I think a lot of people felt like it was, say, a ripoff of the Crow, which it isn't. But right. I think people felt like it might have been that, and that's why it didn't. Two things came out too close to each other.
And it was funny because that was the same time. It was during the same time. Dude, he's being shopped. He's got El Muerto. You got this Jason Cruz with The World of Quest, right? And it was like we were meeting all these people that were in the industry that we're just about to break into. So you had two different spectrums, right? You had him who he had creative control. He was on the set. He was a consultant for his own film. But then you had, you know, Jason Cruz who gave up the rights and he wasn't a consultant. They did whatever they wanted with it, right? So you had two different perspectives in the game at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And then you had the Sharks coming after Duty and they were just trying to just rip it off. And I'm like, you know, so it was like, there's a lot of history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, El Muerto came out in 2007, so it was way after The Crow. But I think people remembered The Crow from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Aztec Zombie, created by Javier Hernandez.
Yes.
Big shout out to Javier, man. He's still doing his thing.
Yeah, yeah. He used to host a radio show on a college station, and that's how I ended up on his show. And then I invited him to Cast the Craze podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he found me on the net from posting all over social media, and then that's how that happened.
Yeah,
and at that time it was forums. I was a beast on forums,
bro. Forums.
I was on like 40 forums.
Yeah, we'll talk more about forums in April 16th.
Like, what's a forum?
Yeah, make sure you tune in. We're gonna have a good time.
It's next, we're gonna have MySpace.
Yeah, next we're gonna have LA Cunningham on the show. This has been fun, man. I enjoyed the conversation. You know what I'm saying? And the chat was live. But yeah, man, it was interesting. If you guys want to check that out, make sure you check it out.
Yeah, I will edit the summary. I'll add the links to all these videos that I recommend that you check out. Great history, great life lessons out there for everybody out there.
Big time, big time.
Yeah, man.
Time, my friend. But yeah, Sammy, this has been good time. Very interesting conversation. Thanks, Hugo. Appreciate you, my brother.
Yes. So yeah, so next week we'll be back with LA Cunningham, and I'll be share some insight from the convention that I just attended, which is LitCon. It's gonna be lit at the con, and so I'll be there this weekend. It's gonna be dope. I'm excited about that. So great. Thank you, brother. And so if you like this episode, please hit that like button, subscribe, share it with a friend, tell everybody where you heard us from. Cast the Craze Podcast, the longest running independent comic book podcast out there, founded in 2005, first one of its kind. And we're still doing it, and we do it to shine the light on our guests. And the more people that subscribe to the show and share this, the more exposure our guests get. And that's why we do it. So please tell a friend. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Pandora or any of the streaming platforms, please head over to YouTube and subscribe. Give us a rating on the platforms that you're listening to us on. We appreciate every single one of you. With that said, I'm Sam the Crazy Man Vera.
Don't forget to check out The Art of Samuel Vera on YouTube. Check out Get Your Meds on YouTube. Pre-order Russ 5377. Check out everything we have going on dudesworld.com. And I'm George Medina. Peace.
It's just easy, it does not. Crazy. No, I was talking about my friend Acquies. I met him.
Say my name. Right?
This is what you were thinking? Oh, my God. He described me. He said, I'm the idiot.
You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You are listening to Catch the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.